Welcome to God at Work, Stories of Grace and Faith. I'm your host, Chuck Groover. This week, I decided to look at the person that wrote the hymn that, to be honest, I was kind of surprised to hear a lot of people actually consider to be a Christmas song. Yet, when you actually look at the original lyrics, there is nothing really Christmas about it. The song I'm talking about, which I'll actually talk about in the next episode, is Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee. And I'll also try to find out when the lyrics were switched around in it to the version that a lot of people associate with the song at Christmas time. But today, I want to basically just look into the life of the guy who wrote it, Henry Van Dyke Jr. Or as some websites will just call him Henry Van Dyke. And leave off the Jr. part for some reason. He was born November 10th, 1852 in Germantown, Pennsylvania. And he was the son of Henry Jackson Van Dyke Sr., who was a prominent Presbyterian clergyman and also pretty much in the early influence for the younger Van Dyke to actually become a minister himself. And his mother was Henrietta Ashmead. So, just kind of an aside, I kind of think it's funny that when you look at it, both of his parents were named Henry. But that's, to an extent, but that's kind of just going on a rabbit trail. Van Dyke Jr. became a multi-talented personality, being known as an author, an educator, as well as being a clergyman. And is actually known for his works, which included short stories, poems, and essays. Some of what Van Dyke believed in included a sympathy for man, fostering companionship with nature, and promoting a reverent view of life. And he contributed to various fields through being an influential writer, including religion, literature, education, diplomacy, public service, and nature. And he received many honors, including being elected to the Academy of Arts and Letters. He was friends with like the likes of Helen Keller, who actually wrote a very, you'll see it if you go to some of the links in the show notes. She actually wrote about her thoughts regarding Van Dyke, and it was very interesting. He also, an honor that he had was being the pastor that officiated Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens's funeral. He graduated from Poly Prep County Day School in 1869. Graduated from Princeton University in 1873 and eventually went on to Princeton Theological Seminary in 1877. And for those of you who didn't realize it, a lot of the early colleges, especially those that we probably consider Ivy League schools, actually started out as theological seminaries. I might look into the history of some of those in a future episode on down the line. He also attended the Brooklyn Polytechnic Institute before going to Princeton, and he also studied for 2 years at the University of Berlin in that time. In 1879, Van Dyke joined the Presbyterian ministry, and 4 years later, he actually became the pastor of Brick Presbyterian Church in New York. And in a short time while there, he actually gained a national reputation for his preaching. His first sermon was actually on the voice of God, which was all about hearing pretty much God's voice within nature. In fact, Van Dyke's love of the outdoors was a integral part of his Christianity, and his dual belief in nature and religion influenced his literary criticism and other writings, which, to an extent, we will see it again next episode when we look into the song Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee. Van Dyke started his writing career while still working as a minister, publishing his first book in 1884, and the book was The Reality of Religion, and it was pretty much based on his studies in seminary, as well as his vocation in the ministry. His second book, The Story of the Psalms, was about his role as a pastor, and it actually brought together his love of religion and literature. And then his third book was a literary criticism to the works of Alfred Lord Tennyson, and it was titled The Poetry of Tennyson, in which he actually helped people to know more about the spirit and beliefs of Alfred Lord Tennyson, as well as this book helped to make Van Dyke actually an important figure in the world of literature. Some of his other works include The True Presbyterian Doctrine of the Church, The Bible as It Is, The Christ Child in Art, The Gospel of an Age of Doubt, The First Christmas Tree, and The Story of the Other Wise Man. An interesting thing is The Story of the Other Wise Man, Van Dyke, and what probably caught my attention was in hearing about this story, it kind of, some stories I've written or have floating around in my head kind of almost take on an aspect similar to how he approached this story. The Story of the Other Wise Man, Van Dyke actually introduces a fourth wise man in the story, and this wise man, I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce the name right, Artaban, sold all of his belongings to bring three precious jewels to the Christ child. In the course of the story, Artaban encounters different people along his journey that need his help, to which, being a generous person, he ends up helping them, but it eventually leaves Artaban with no jewels to present as a gift. And it's one of those things, at the end of the story, he discovers how, even though he didn't have the precious jewels to present as a gift, his gift was learning how he essentially helped Jesus by helping those that were in need. As I said, just the fact that it's kind of a fictional look at an event in the Bible to bring about kind of some sort of biblical truth or something, or a speculative look at an event in the Bible, while it's not gospel, it, as a story, it kind of interests me, because, as I said, I have stories floating around of pretty much related to, like, the Apostle Paul that aren't biblical, but they can fit in with biblical truths type thing. So just that story just kind of caught my attention. And I might, in a later episode, if I do a year where I'm looking at writers, I might, while not looking again at Van Dyke, might look at this story. But back onto Van Dyke, he was also considered to be one of the most important short story writers and produced works such as The Ruling Passion, The Blue Flower, and The Unknown Quantity. I'm not sure how some of his works I'd mentioned earlier differ from being short stories as far as length. But, again, those are a couple more works of his, if you're interested in trying to read some of his works. Even though his church work involved theological studies, he also enjoyed reading significant books by great writers, in which these books also fostered his love of human companionship. Around the year 1900, Van Dyke became the Murray Professor of English Literature at Princeton, and his belief in study and scholarship is the reason he included literature, really, in his preaching and incorporated preaching into his literature. That same year brought about his book, The Poetry of the Psalms, in which he discusses the Bible as a noble and impassioned interpretation of nature and life. It was through this position as a professor that he actually influenced many students, including what would be at that time a future celebrity travel writer, Richard Halliburton, who at that time was editor-in-chief of the Princeton Pictorial. He also, around this time, chaired the committee that wrote the first Presbyterian printed liturgy, the Book of Common Worship, of 1906. And pretty much during this time that he served as a professor, because he pretty much served as a professor up until about 1923, he spent some time in the University of Paris as a lecturer from 1908 to 1909. And then in 1913, through his basically friend and a former classmate, Woodrow Wilson, who was at the time president, Van Dyke was appointed as minister to the Netherlands and Luxembourg. And it was while he was serving in this position, he actually, World War I started, which threw Europe into dismay, and many of the traveling Americans that were in Europe at that time actually headed for the Netherlands to seek refuge. And to be honest, Van Dyke was not a trained diplomat or an inexperienced ambassador. He actually did a pretty good job, from what I've read, of acting like a true diplomat, and maintained the rights of these American refugees in Europe, because with all of them heading to the Netherlands, he was actually expected to comfort these panic-stricken American refugees, as that was part of his duties as being pretty much the ambassador to the Netherlands and Luxembourg. He later resigned from this position in 1916 and returned to the States, going on to then join the chaplain's corps of the U.S. Naval Reserve, where he basically served as lieutenant commander. And through my research on him, I didn't see dates associated with that, so I'm kind of assuming that went on during World War I as well, because that's where it's mentioned, is right in that time frame. Then in 1919, he returned to Princeton, continuing his vocation as a teacher/professor, where, again, he retired in 1923. And he went on to live about 10 more years after he retired, died on April 10th of 1933, and is actually buried in Princeton Cemetery. And 2 years later, his son, I'm not going to try to pronounce his name, even though I have it written down, actually published Henry Van Dyke's biography. Another interesting tidbit, besides just his relationship with, evidently his friendship or acquaintance with Helen Keller and also Mark Twain, and the fact that he was asked to perform Mark Twain's funeral, one of his best known poems is titled Time Is. And it's also known as For Katrina's Sundial, due to it basically being, it was originally written as an inscription for a sundial in the garden of an estate owned by his friends, Spencer and Katrina Trask. But the interesting thing about this poem is it is pretty much well-known in fairly recent culture. Part of it was read at the funeral of Princess Diana. It also inspired a couple of songs, one being Time Is by the group It's a Beautiful Day, and the song Time by Mark Mathery. And actually, a section of the poem, I believe it's the same section that was read at Princess Diana's funeral, was used for a memorial in Grosvenor Square, which was dedicated to the British victims of the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. And it was also used as the closing of the 2013 novel Child of Time by Bob Johnson. So, again, not a whole lot of information there, is like with the last couple episodes, but really it was an interesting look into his life. If you want to read a little bit more, I'll have the resources I used, links to them, in the show notes. Also, what might be interesting would be to actually take a look at that biography published by his son, as well as I plan on trying to locate some of these works of his, like The Other Wise Man, maybe The First Christmas Tree, just to read some of those to see what his writing style was like and everything. But again, this is Chuck Groover talking about Henry Van Dyke Jr., and that's God at Work. Thank you for listening to God at Work, Stories of Grace and Faith. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at God at Work Podcast. If you have comments, suggestions, or a story you would like to be considered for the podcast, you can email us at stories@godatworkpodcast.com. If you enjoy this podcast and want to help support us, go to patreon.com/GodAtWorkPodcast, or you can also support us by leaving us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. God at Work, Stories of Grace and Faith, is brought to you by Becoming God's Man Ministries, and is recorded and produced by me, Chuck Groover. Theme music for God at Work is by the band 39 Stripes and can be found at facebook.com/39stripes. And again, thank you for listening.